Welcome to another episode of the Colorado BQA Chat podcast. I'm Libby Bigler, the Colorado Beef Quality Assurance State Coordinator, and I'm also your host for today's podcast episode. I hope you've had an opportunity to listen to some of our first episodes, whether that be cattle handling with Dr. Temple Grandin or using Beef Quality Assurance as a marketing tool with Dr. Jason Ahola. We're excited to use this platform as a way to help listeners engage with the BQA program, even in times when we're restricted in terms of our ability to gather. We hope this podcast will help you apply BQA on your operation with advice and insight from folks in the beef industry who are at the leading edge of BQA. The Colorado BQA Chat podcast is brought to you by Colorado's Beef Quality Assurance Program and is funded by the Colorado Beef Council and Colorado State University's Department of Animal Sciences. As always, if you're interested in becoming BQA or BQA Transportation Certified, please give me a call at 970-491-BEEF or log on to bqa.org. We're not letting the pandemic stop us, so you can contact me to schedule a training today. I'm excited for today's guest. Dr. Julia Herman with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association is joining us to talk a little bit about biosecurity and how we can apply biosecurity on our cattle operations. I think it's interesting timing as we're in the middle of a global pandemic, and we're used to thinking about biosecurity right now in terms of human health. So those things like wearing a mask, socially distancing, even things like quarantine and isolation are all considerations that we can keep in mind when we talk about biosecurity from a cattle perspective. So with that, welcome Dr. Herman. And if you wouldn't mind, could you please provide us a little bit of your background and how you got into this position with NCBA?
Certainly. Thank you for inviting me and to join the podcast. As you mentioned, so my name is Dr. Julia Herman, and I'm a Colorado native. I'm originally from Eastern Colorado, so I haven't moved far from my home area. I studied at Colorado State University for a few different degrees. I originally wanted to be a zoo vet, so my bachelor's is in zoology, and I also have a master's in clinical sciences with an emphasis in epidemiology from CSU, and then I finished off with getting my doctorate of veterinary medicine there. I studied infectious disease for my master's. I focused on looking at brucellosis in Yellowstone National Park bison. And if you study brucellosis in the United States, you automatically are connected to the livestock industry because we all know that brucellosis is a federally regulated disease, and it can have some devastating impacts in cattle herds around the greater Yellowstone area. But it's also a zoonotic disease, which means it's transmitted to humans. But so I used that experience as I was going through vet school and trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I have a lot of my experience through vet school was mostly in livestock and specifically cattle. I did a lot of feedlot externships and cow-calf externships. My first job was in central Kansas at a mixed animal practice where I think we're in the top five counties in Kansas for cow-calf operations. So I got to see a lot of cows. My husband, he's worked for CSU for a number of years, and he was because of his job, I ended up moving back to Northern Colorado after a year in Kansas. And I joined livestock team at Colorado State University at the veterinary school. And so I was there for a few years helping teach veterinary students about rural and practical livestock medicine, and also dipped my toe in the dairy industry, which is also a fantastic industry that's growing in Colorado. But I joined NCBA a little over a year ago, with the hope and focus of my educator experience. Applying that educator experience to producers, veterinary students, and veterinarians rather than just veterinary students. So that's a little bit about how I came to NCBA.
Sure. It sounds like a lot of your background has really lended to a lot of your work right now in the area of biosecurity, especially that research on brucellosis and the transmissibility and those kind of things, especially when we consider creating biosecurity plans on a producer level and the practicality of it. So I think that that really lends well to what you're doing now.
It definitely provides a nice perspective on what is, what could be a perceived threat, what is the real threat, what are practical ways to prevent that threat. I do think that that experience is, I mean, it's interesting to me too, so I think that helps. But yes, the experience has definitely honed the way that we are managing this biosecurity plan within our organization.
So with that, now that we've learned a little bit more about your background, we're excited to be rolling on these interviews and get a variety of folks in here with different expertise that can help us fill in our listeners about some different BQA topics and their importance, and especially some of these new things that are coming up that maybe haven't been included in traditional BQA programming. You know, the BQA programs that people think of the past really have to do with injections and antibiotic stewardship. But really, today, we've got a lot of issues that come up that maybe weren't included in traditional programming and are some of the reason why some producers should maybe go back and get recertified. And I think one of those is the topic of biosecurity, something that you've been working on pretty regularly over the last few months. So would you be willing to tell us a little bit of your backstory on what you've been working on biosecurity in the beef herd and really why it's important to the BQA program?
Certainly. I agree with you. I think there are a number of aspects of the BQA program that tend to get overlooked. Our beef quality assurance program, I look at it as a holistic plan for the cattle producer. And so it's not just about reducing injection site lesions, even though that is something that we strive to do year over year. But it's having best management practices in other aspects. So that means, you know, maybe that's low stress handling, maybe that's improving nutrition so that your cattle have good immune systems to fight off whatever they're exposed to. And then biosecurity is certainly something that I think everybody has been paying more attention to this year, especially. But it's something that I think a lot of producers they already have some of these biosecurity precautions that they're doing every day. And I think what we decided to do with the beef quality, or with this section of the beef quality assurance program, is to really emphasize what else we could be doing, seeing what we're doing now and how we can improve our biosecurity measures on our beef farms to try to prepare for something that might happen in the future. One of the reasons why we decided to do this, I had the opportunity to attend a foot and mouth disease in-person training course in Africa earlier this year before the world shut down. And what this program did was it was hosted by a couple of groups at Texas A&M University. And it was the first time that veterinarians and animal health professionals from North America were invited to a country that has FMD endemic. So, these countries they deal with FMD all the time because it's in their cow herd, it's in their livestock herd, and they just they're able to manage it somehow within their infrastructure. So, I was one of the first. One of the first people to be able to be invited to this. And so I got to represent the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and our North American beef and cattle industry at this workshop. And what we learned about was, in addition to actually seeing foot and mouth disease in cattle, we went and saw a live outbreak. We were able to learn about the disease, learn about diagnostic protocols, and how the veterinarians and government officials within that area of Uganda are able to manage these outbreaks and still allow these farmers and allow these farmers to sell their product. And then what we also did was we talked with all the people that were in that workshop from all over. I mean, they were from all over the country. We had multiple people from Europe, all the veterinarians, locally from Africa. We had representatives from Canada, and we talked about what would happen if foot and mouth disease came into our livestock industry within the United States, and what we would do if it happened. We talked about economic reasons why it would be devastating, animal welfare reasons why it would be devastating. And then we also tried to put together a proactive plan on what to do, what to do before that ever happens. And so what we took back from that was, what program do we have that is already reaching thousands and thousands of cattle producers all across the country and is teaching them best management practices and being proactive in the way that they take care of their animals and make sure that they are taking the best care that they can. And that was that's the Chaka funded beef quality assurance program. We're already doing this. And so I took that experience from Africa, and we're honing our biosecurity section in our beef quality assurance program and trying to get that message out on what we can be doing to prevent prevent diseases from coming in. But then if they do get here, how do we prepare our cattle producers for if they get there, if it comes in?
Sure. So essentially what we're working towards on a national level with the beef quality assurance program is really building kind of a more robust training section surrounding biosecurity. And I know that you guys have been spending a lot of time working pretty hard on building some templates that our producers can use, who have gone through beef quality assurance training, to really put together some sort of written biosecurity plan. Can you tell us kind of where you are on that and how producers might be able to implement some sort of plan and how kind of user-friendly you've been able to make it for folks?
Yeah, absolutely. So what our team has been working on for a number of months and is what we're calling the daily biosecurity plan template. And what this is focusing on is those daily actions that cattle producers, employees, anybody that comes on to the farm or ranch or facility that houses cattle, what are some areas that we need to be focusing on to prevent disease from either coming onto the farm, going off the farm, or spreading within the farm. And I'm using farm as a general term, but farm in this particular case, it applies to the cow-calf ranch, it applies to a stocker operation, it applies to a feedlot. So what we're doing is we're developing it's a fillable PDF. So we're trying to make it as easy to fill out as possible. And it covers a number of sections, including maybe where the feed comes from. It includes animal movement. So are you moving cattle from the valley up into the mountains every summer? Like that's something that we need to consider with disease risk. There's also training logs or people logs where you're recording who's had access to the cattle. Like, I mean, we think about, obviously we have family and employees that come in on a daily basis, but what are those other community members that are coming in on a daily basis that we may not think about? So like the mail person, they are going from one farm to the next. And in the case of, you know, if we had some sort of infectious disease that could be carried on soil or on the wheels of those delivery vans, I mean, that's something to think about as within your biosecurity plan to figure out what your risks are. So we have we modeled our plan off of the Secure Beef Supply plan, which the Secure Beef Supply is a national plan, and it's their guidelines on planning for if a foreign animal disease, such as foot and mouth disease, came into the United States. And so we modeled the language, we modeled the setup of the plan off of the secure beef supply plan. So the idea is you can start with the daily biosecurity plan and you're able to transition to making that secure beef supply plan for your operation. And it makes it a little easier because if you go straight into the secure beef supply plan, there's a lot of things in there that can be really daunting. And we wanted to make it a little more easy to work through. The daily biosecurity, when we say daily biosecurity, we're talking about, even parasites coming in from other, when you purchase animals from external to your farm. We're talking about things like bovine respiratory disease or any of those, any of the viruses or bacteria that are associated with that. Yoni's disease is something that we are seeing more and more of in the beef industry. And so this plan tries to point out several different areas on the operation where we can be trying to protect our animals and keep them as healthy as possible.
So although it seems like this daily biosecurity template or plan that producers can find and fill out is really developed a lot based on some of your experience with the in Uganda with foot and mouth disease, really the idea is to create something that's in a written form for producers so that they can eliminate biosecurity and disease risks that maybe aren't necessarily foreign animal diseases, but things that could come in and cause problems to their herds. But at the same time, by having a written plan like this, if we get most producers across the country to have a written biosecurity plan in place, if there is a situation where a foreign animal disease like foot and mouth disease is introduced in the US, we're all going to be on a relatively level playing field and have opportunities to be able to kind of encapsulate and close off certain areas where something like FMD might be, correct?
Yes, that would be the ideal situation.
Yeah.
I think we've all learned this year with COVID on the human side, how you can't have a one size fits all plan. And because areas, just within Colorado, the way that a ranch in northeastern Colorado handles their biosecurity is going to be much different than a farm that is closer to the Front Range. So the idea with this written biosecurity plan, at least the daily one, and even the secure beef supply one, there is some flexibility within that plan to really make a specialized plan for each operation. So the producer knows their operation the best and they're able to go through these plans and say, that doesn't apply to me, that doesn't apply to me, this does apply to me, and this is how we would try to minimize risk by implementing these specific factors. So the idea with the daily biosecurity plan, there's a big picture to the daily biosecurity plan. Obviously, it's going to help the cattle producer on their operation and anybody who is interacting within that operation. But what it also does you've been mentioning it. I mean, it's a written plan. There's you have proof that you have thought about this and you're implementing it. And when we transition to the secure beef supply plan, if something like foot and mouth disease gets into the country and we are forced to do a stop movement around the area of infection, or we have to modify what we do with our animals because we're not able to move them, these plans also provide a little bit of a contingency plan for producers to think about. So if you are unable to move your animals for a few days, which if foot and mouth disease comes in, which I should have mentioned this earlier, but USDA, they already have a foreign animal disease plan in place that highlights a lot of things on a national level of what would happen if a foreign animal disease would come in. And so one of the things with a stop movement in the case of a foot and mouth disease outbreak is producers are going to need some of these written plans in order to be approved for a permit to move their animals. And so these biosecurity plans, like I said, the daily biosecurity plan steps up to the secure beef supply plan. So if an operation has a secure beef has a daily and a daily biosecurity plan and a secure beef supply plan, it is going to be easier for them to get these permits to move their animals and to continue or to have continuity of business and still be able to sell their product. There's a lot of information on this. Secure Beef has its own website, and then there's also Secure. We call it the Secure Food Supply. So there's Secure Pork, Secure Milk, Secure Egg. A lot of these different livestock industries already have these plans in place, and trying to have this a plan that is it's one plan that everybody follows. Theoretically, in the midst of an outbreak, it would make it easier for people because everybody should, everyone has the same template and everybody has the same plan. And hopefully we're able to follow guidance from our state animal health officials a little bit better during the outbreak.
Sure. So going back a little bit to the point that you made a little bit earlier about the fact that all of these operations, especially in beef production, maybe are run a little bit differently than each other. And so consequently will have different components to their biosecurity plans. I wanted to just mention, that's really been my experience as I've gone out more recently and been conducting more of these BQA feed yard assessments to get some of our Colorado feedlots in the BQA feed yard assessment database. I've noticed that although a lot of their different feedlots biosecurity plans, even in the feeding sector, are very similar, there are a lot of differences. And so I know that some of these producers have some sort of biosecurity program in place, but maybe they don't have it written down. And so I think you've addressed a lot of things that are important when it comes to biosecurity in not necessarily needing that plan to be one size fits all, but definitely needing it to incorporate certain components that can help manage disease outbreaks on a number of different levels. So I also wanted to mention the cattle industry is segmented on a number of levels. So we have different types of producers. We have cow-calf producers or stockers or feeders, as you mentioned. And so I was curious to ask you, is this one of the reasons that maybe we have not really embraced biosecurity to the extent that we're hoping to in the future when we compare to other livestock industries like pork or poultry? I know that they're more vertically integrated and even just their production methods are a little bit different than the beef industry. And so consequently, disease can get into some of their systems and almost wipe out entire herds or flocks. Do you think that that's part of the reason why maybe biosecurity has been something that we talk a little bit about, but we haven't taken a big forward step to approach it from that manner?
You bring up a good point. It's a valid concern with how biosecurity, should be, I guess, higher up on our priority list. I'm biased, obviously, since I've been focusing on this for a number of months. It is really important. The really wonderful thing about the cattle industry here in the United States is how diverse it is. Just like you said, we have small cow-calf producers, we have big cow-calf producers, we have animals who are raised in feedlots. Maybe they're dry lotted, maybe they're on pasture part of the time. I think that's one of my favorite parts about the cattle industry is how diverse and how creative that our producers are when they're raising their animals. However, like you said, I do think provides a little bit of a challenge when we're talking to all of these different types of operations and trying to get them to focus on, if you're writing that biosecurity plan, again, it's not a one size fits all. And, you know, my neighbor who has 50 head of seed stock cattle is not going to have the same plan as the 5,000 head feed yard down the road. And what we did with this biosecurity plan, the daily biosecurity plan for within the beef quality assurance, is we tried to allow for that flexibility and allow a little bit of adaptability to each operation. And if all of our cattle producers, regardless of sector, had this basic foundation knowledge of biosecurity and this basic plan for each of their operations, I do think it would help. It helps on a number of levels. Again, we talked about how it helps the individual farm, but it also helps, when they're selling their animals to that next sector. If we have cow-calf operations who are, or they're affecting these biosecurity measures on their farm, they're creating a healthier animal to move on to that next sector. And so I think having a plan like this that everybody is able to fill out, I do think it helps across sectors. And so I do think it helps bring a little more connectivity between the sectors. It's making that animal, it's protecting that animal as much as we can and preparing it to perform as well as it can wherever it's going to go next in the industry. Pork and poultry are vertically integrated and they have a little bit more control over their biosecurity programs. And so I do think, I think it's just a challenge that the cattle industry is going to have to continue to work together to improve. One of the basic foundations for beef quality, for our beef quality assurance program, is continuous improvement. And so we know that we're not perfect and we know that there's always room to improve. And so I think this having this daily biosecurity plan is one way to help the individual cattle producer improve, but it also helps our industry improve.
Right. I think that makes a ton of sense. And I think it's interesting that we can use something as simple as a biosecurity plan to help each of our segments of the industry kind of engage more with one another and work with one another as they go through and consider biosecurity on their operation and then as they move cattle through the system. I think that's an interesting way to look at a biosecurity plan. So I know that you mentioned throughout our discussion, you've talked about little pieces here and there that are important things to think about when it comes to biosecurity. You mentioned even something as simple as foot traffic from like a mailman, or if you have a rendering truck come to your operation. Those kind of things are things that are obvious to think about because they visit all of the different operations on a specific route and so potentially could spread disease that way. But what are some other things that you find interesting that maybe one of our common listeners or producers might not think about when they really think about, you know, stopping or regulating disease spread or introduction of disease? What kind of things might they need to consider in a biosecurity plan?
That's a fabulous question. The first thing that I immediately thought of was a lesson from when I was in Uganda. Their livestock system is set up a lot different than the U.S., so it's hard to make direct comparisons. Mm-hmm. The area of Uganda that we were in, there are a lot of livestock farmers that they're nomadic, and so they move with their animals to wherever the food is, wherever the water is. And even though there are some producers who are able to fence off their land, I guess it's just not the same as it is here in the U.S. I mean, there are people still crossing those fence lines, still mm-hmm. crossing those borders. And what I noticed was when one person had sick animals, whether they knew it was foot and mouth disease or not, something that was similar was all the neighboring farmers would come in and try to help. And I think we can relate to that. If your neighbor is having an unusually hard calving season, you're going to go volunteer and help out as much as you can, or you're going to send your, maybe send your kids to go help or something like that. Mm-hmm. I thought that was wonderful that these farmers are going and trying to help, each other. The hard part with foot and mouth disease, and, which I should have mentioned at the beginning, foot and mouth disease is the most contagious viral disease in our livestock species, so cloven hoof species, so cattle, pigs, goats, sheep, wildlife. because it's so infectious, those farmers, when they went to the one farm to help with the sick animal, they were actually taking disease back to their farm. And it's devastating because you have a poor outcome from what is a good intention. And so I see that a lot in our cattle producers here in the United States. I think, you think about branding. It's not just one family helping with a branding. You're bringing in friends from the city that have never done it before, or you're bringing in friends from across the state because it's a yearly tradition to come and help out. That's one thing that I, at least that was a personal connection that I made, where I was like, it makes sense to think about you're tracking manure from one farm to another, or something like that. Paying attention to those small movements or those small actions when given the right pathogen or disease, it could be a really poor outcome.
That's an interesting perception or something that you noticed. And I think it's one of the really refreshing things about the industry that we work in is our ability to pick up and work together and help each other out, especially in times of devastation or things like that. And so, you know, if somebody has a tornado come through their ranch and you're there to go help pick up the pieces, I think a lot of people don't think, oh, I might be bringing something from my cattle, or I might take something back to my cattle. And so that's a really interesting point that you make, that it's fascinating that you had to be in a different country in a different situation to see kind of the nomadic herds and people going to help them with the most infectious disease that we know for our species, to really put those pieces together. But I think you're right. I think it could easily be a biosecurity risk of just having folks on and off. And I feel like that would be something hard to write into a biosecurity plan, of making your friends and neighbors go through a boot wash or something like that before they come help out. But at least it's something to keep top of mind for people to think about, so they can minimize losses when it comes to disease and outbreak and things like that.
There might be people, it's not a Tyvek suit with, you know, a plastic shield to cover your face, but maybe, you know, if you are going to go help with the branding, maybe it's just ensuring your boots are clean and making sure you're wearing, you know, clean clothes, that you didn't go, you know, tag that calf this morning and then change your clothes before you head on to the neighbors. Our ag industry, we like to help each other. I mean, it's in our blood. And so I'm not advocating for people to stop helping each other. It's just taking an extra step and being like, all right, how do I want to help my neighbor on this level. How else can I help them by making sure that I am paying attention to these biosecurity ideas, right, and making sure I'm not taking something to their operation.
And not inadvertently doing something negative to them in the hopes or with the end goal of being helpful. I think that's key. And you're right. It's simple steps. It's not, you know, being, you know, wearing our masks and face shields to do a branding necessarily that we're so used to right now. Maybe we should with COVID going around, but
yes.
it's a matter of just making sure that your vehicles are clean, that your boots are cleaned. Or for instance, my husband, he'll sometimes AI at a dairy, but he also works at a feedlot. And so he clearly keeps those two attires, if you will. So his muck boots, dairy muck boots or dairy muck boots, and they don't go onto the feedlot, vice versa. Mm-hmm. So those kind of things, I think, are simple steps that people can think about pretty easily that could easily be written into a plan as well. So I also noticed when I've gone through things like the Secure Beef Supply Plan website, some things like creating perimeters around your farm or your operation, and having specific entry and exit points to where, you know, if you have hired trucks to ship cattle, you know, they can stay in a neutral zone but never truly enter the boundaries of your operation, and components like that. But I also think that you may have more in-depth points that people maybe don't think about. And so I would really encourage all of our listeners to go check out the Secure Beef Supply Plan website. They have some really great templates, but also look into this National Beef Quality Assurance Biosecurity Plan template. And this is something that our beef quality assurance programs across the country will be incorporating into our trainings on a regular basis. So I think it's important for those of you who are BQA certified, but need to get recertified and maybe sometimes are thinking, well, I've recertified so many years and it seems to be the same old BQA presentation. This is another reason why it's important to come and get recertified every 3 years, because we are including new and updated information like this biosecurity plan and more specific biosecurity topics that can be applied on your operation. We also have more new components surrounding BQA, especially when it comes to things like transportation, worker safety. All of those components are what is really continually improving the BQA program and ultimately continuing to improve our dedication to our producers and the opportunities that you all have on your operations. So those are definitely things to think about as well. So with that, I'd like to thank Dr. Herman for coming on our program and talking to us a little bit more about some of the new topics surrounding beef quality assurance. So thank you so much for joining us, and we really appreciate you taking time out of your day to explain more about biosecurity and the importance of producers sitting down and writing a biosecurity plan to really work for their operation specifically. So thank you for joining us, Dr. Herman.
Thank you, Libby. This has been a great opportunity, and our daily biosecurity plan is hopefully going to be available on the BQA website towards the end of the year. So please keep a lookout for that. And we're really excited to provide this new resource to our cattle producers, and also excited that our state coordinators are going to be able to get that message out there. So I appreciate the opportunity.
So you'll be able to find that towards the end of the year at www.bqa.org. That's a wrap on this episode of the Colorado BQA Chat podcast. Thank you to all the listeners who've tuned in and continue to support the BQA program in Colorado. Be sure to tune in next time as we continue to gain insight from beef industry experts like today's guest on other BQA topics that are important to you. We'd like to thank the Colorado Beef Council and Colorado State University's Department of Animal Sciences for sponsoring the Colorado BQA Chat podcast and Colorado's BQA program. Beef Quality Assurance is a nationally coordinated, state-implemented producer education and certification program that works to build consumer confidence in beef by focusing the producer's attention to daily production practices that influence the safety, wholesomeness, and quality of beef and beef products. Remember, you can earn your BQA certification for free at any time at www.bqa.org. For in-person certification options, please contact me at the Colorado BQA office, 970-491-BEEF. Thank you, and we look forward to having you join us next time.